This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and it is cold. It's like 18 degrees, which is cold for here in these here Ozarks. I know in some places of the world it gets a lot colder than that, but I don't know that I'd live in a place that was significantly colder than that. And God bless all you people who do, but not me. Oh, we have some friends. Their son joined the Air Force. And when he put down his preference for where he wanted to be stationed, he put down Minot, North Dakota. And I asked my buddy when he told me that, does he know how cold it gets in Minot? And he said, yeah. He said, that's where he wanted to go. Okay. I have the heat on, but it's not heating very much yet. So, because I just started my car, so hopefully it will get heated up on the way home and we'll actually get some heat in the car. That'll be good. In the meantime, I'll keep driving. It is episode 240. No, 249. Which means we've got 11 episodes to go before we hit the 5 years worth of podcast. 5 years! This is what happens when you don't know when to quit. I have to figure out what I'm going to do for the 5 year. 5 years worth of broadcast. I'll have to find somebody who will do the podcast with me. Not sure who, but we'll find somebody. Anyways, so it's been a good week. Finished up my little vacation with my wife. Had a wonderful time. Did the podcast last week in Eureka Springs. That was on Friday morning. And we kicked around Eureka Springs for just a little bit. And then we headed into Branson. Actually, we headed over... maybe I shouldn't talk about that. Because maybe that would be considered trespassing. There was something that I really wanted to see, but it had closed. And so I got on Google Maps and then got down to Google Street View and saw that, you know, it didn't look like anybody had put up any huge barricades to it. And when we decided to make a little side tour, we drove over there and didn't look like anybody had posted no trespassing signs. So I just thought, well, you know, what's the worst that could happen? No one's here. They might see me, come kick me out, but that's okay. So I left my wife to kind of stand guard there at the entrance in the car. And I said, you know, you can drive off if you want to. If someone shoots you off, then give me a call. I didn't tell her that. I said, just you stand guard and I'll go in. I've got my cell phone. So I went in and took some pictures because I wanted to see it. And it was interesting. It was fun. I hiked around there. So then we went into Branson and found ourselves a place to stay for the night and got settled in there. And then we went to see The Hobbit, The Desolation of Smaug in 3D. And that was fun. 3D high frame rate. That was fun. We went to see that. And then we kicked around on Saturday. And Lynette's parents actually came down with her aunt and uncle Saturday night. And then we kicked around a little bit more on Sunday. And then we came back home. We had a really nice time. Just a nice, nice time. And then this week's been weird. Because I worked for 2 days. And then, of course, off for New Year's. And so Annette and I kicked around a little bit yesterday. And then I'm back on Thursday today, and then I'm off tomorrow, so hasn't been a bad work week this week. And I actually got a chance to see my godson this morning and have breakfast with him, so yay. Lots of good stuff. What else? I'm waiting to do the last two tutorials from Karas Ionit. I finished one up just before Christmas, and I sent it off to him. And I did get a notification that he had downloaded the files, but he hasn't responded yet. I'm assuming he's on vacation. So I'm going to give him probably till tomorrow, and then if I don't hear from him, then I'll write him. Barring that, if that doesn't show up, I have some mailing of books that I have to do for people who have actually given reviews for Amazon.com. And I have some deliveries of some other books to do. And then, ta-da! I think I'm ready to start the first book of Windfall. This is going to be interesting. When I reworked the website, because it had been shut down because hackers had got to it. It was an old version of Joomla, and hackers had got to it. And so the company that runs it had shut it down, so I just opened a WordPress site, and I was back up. And so I was reworking a bunch of stuff. I wrote on my main page there about the great adventure I'm in working and writing. And I was thinking about that today, because what I say in there is that I write to understand my world better, and I write to be more successful at life, because that's really, it does that for me. I mean, I would love to write for a living, but, you know, the chances of being able to do that are pretty slim at this point. And so I just write for my own satisfaction, and then I have beta readers, and if, you know, if they get something out of it too, great. And that's about it. I'm never really expecting to make any money off of this. I have a job for that, and I will do my job for that. And I'm blessed to have work. I'm very, very grateful to have work and to apparently have people who are pleased with my work. So I'm very grateful for that. But I was just kind of thinking a little bit today about that, and if that's really the truth, that I write simply to understand life better and to move forward. I got thinking about the term artist, and is that what an artist does, or is an artist more driven than that to create their art? And I don't know what the answer to those questions are. Is art always self-serving for the artist? Does it make his life bearable? Is it doing art as an escape so that you don't have to face life? Or is it doing something so that you can better crystallize your thoughts about life? I just started thinking about it today, so I don't know. It's interesting. One point years ago, I was having a discussion, I think it was with Mitzi Adams, about life, the universe, and everything, and about writing, and I told her at that time, everything that I write is going to be about something. And her response was, why don't you just write stuff to entertain people? She said, because I think you could do that really well. And I said, no. Everything I write is specifically designed to be about something, and it always will be. I said, there's plenty of people who can just write and entertain other people. And just write as a form of distraction, you know, to help people be distracted from life for a few minutes. But that ain't gonna be me. And so that's another strike against me. And I know people come up with examples like C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, and, you know, people who had a message underneath their writing. But, you know, for every one of those who made it, there are hundreds of thousands who have never made it as writers. And that's just a fact of life. So that's okay. I enjoy writing. Anyways, today, I came across this article in The Atlantic And I'm already losing my light, which isn't a good thing because this was a very interesting article, but there was lots and lots and lots and lots. I mean, the Atlantic articles are long. I don't know if you've ever read anything from the Atlantic website, but they are long. When I first copied this article and put it into Word just to, you know, start making my notes off it, it was 50 pages. 50 pages, and I thought, oh, well, I guess I'm not going to be covering all that. But it's a really interesting article called Surviving Anxiety. And it was by Scott Stossel, who is the editor of The Atlantic, or one of the editors, the editor, I don't know for sure, which is, that is an accomplishment to be that. And very bravely, I thought, he did an article on anxiety. Because from his article, he indicates that he has struggled with anxiety all his life. And he said he's tried drugs and therapy and booze. And he's finally come to terms with his anxiety. He hasn't solved it, but he's at least come to terms with it. And he starts off the article by talking about the regimen that he goes through in order to get ready to speak in public to people. And he said, "It, you know, he settled on this regimen because it works for him. So like 4 hours before he talks, he takes his first half a milligram of Xanax, you know. And then about an hour ago, hour before he talks, he takes another half milligram and perhaps 20 milligrams or Iterol. And, you know, along the way with this, he's also drinking vodka. And he basically takes, I don't mean to laugh. Let me back up. It's amazing to me that he can function. I couldn't function. He can function with the combination of drugs and alcohol. But he said he's trying to balance getting himself stupefied with beating down the anxiety. And he said if he can get it balanced just right, then he can actually deliver his speech in front of people. And I certainly am like any other human being in that I can get under stress, I can get under anxiety, but obviously I've never experienced anything that he talks about in this article. And he goes on from there to say that, yes, he knows that this is dangerous and it's not healthy, but it's the only way that he's been able to find to deal with the anxiety that he is under of talking in front of people and being able to accomplish what he needs to accomplish. And he goes from there to really talk about his life and the fact that he has dealt with anxiety all his life from a wide variety of things. He goes on to say things like, I've abandoned dates, walked out of exams, had breakdowns during job interviews, plane flights, train trips, and car rides, and simply walking down the street. An ordinary day doing ordinary things, reading a book, lying in bed, talking on the phone, sitting in a meeting, playing tennis. I have thousands of times been stricken with a pervasive sense of existential dread and been beset by nausea, vertigo, shaking, and a panoply of other physical symptoms. In these instances, I have sometimes been convinced that death and something somehow worse was imminent. And this has been a pervasive theme through his life that he sought help for and struggled with all his life. He talks at one point about his dread of throwing up, his dread of vomiting, and the person he was seeing at the time about this said, well, what we need to do is have you actually throw up and induce throwing up, and that will lets you see that it's not that big of a deal. And he goes, it's just amazing. Because they give him the whatever that pectin or whatever makes you throw up, they give him that, and the nurse gives it to him on a single dose, and you know, he just gets nauseated, but he retches and retches, but he never throws up. And the nurse said, I've never seen anyone with as much control as you've got. And there's just anxiety is a pervasive theme in his life, and as he goes back through his life, he can see that it was a pervasive theme in his parents' life and his grandparents' life. And the older I get, the more fascinating it is to me the impact that genetics has on us, on our outlook on life, the impact that our raising has on us and the effect it has on our lives. And the more and more and more I realized how utterly blessed I have been to have the upbringing that I had and to inherit the genetics that I have inherited. And the more and more I become convinced, the farther I go along in life, how that has put me on a path that I did nothing to deserve. I mean, there's plenty of things in my life that I have done and been disciplined and stayed with, and, you know, in those struggles of, oh, I really don't want to do that today, you know, of just saying, no, we're going to get this done and just going forward. But that ability to say, no, we're going to get this done and we're just going forward, part of that comes from my own practice, but part of that also just comes from this amazing genetic legacy that I've inherited, plus this amazing upbringing that I had. And so I'm truly, truly grateful for those things, and I would hope that I also recognize that there are many people who never had those chances, and that they are in their own challenges. And some of it is, while it is all of their own making, and while it is possible for them to unmake those things, it is nonetheless extremely difficult to get there. I mean, the longer I'm alive, the less flippant I become about the struggles that other people have. I would hope that I was never entirely flippant externally, but certainly in my earlier years, in my younger years, the thought would present itself easily to me, well, if they would just do X, they could solve that problem. But the human mind is extraordinarily complex. And each individual person, through their genetics and through their upbringing, has a set of battles that they wage. And those battles can be much, much more difficult for one person than for another person simply because of their background and their genetics. And so I am constantly grateful for what I have been blessed with, but I'm really hoping that that then makes me more compassionate to understand others, that not everybody got that to get started. And that's also something that makes me truly inspired when I read articles like this about someone who was born into a genetic legacy of being predisposed to anxiety and was raised in an environment where there was a great deal of anxiety being displayed. Hopefully having an understanding of that then makes me more compassionate, and it also makes me very, very appreciative of whatever those individuals are doing to attempt to cope with that, and how they are in their own way living lives that are extraordinary. I mean, it's amazing to me, after you read this article, this extremely lengthy article about what this man has endured in his life and what he has tried, the fact that he is nonetheless the editor of The Atlantic is nothing short of inspiring. Because he's been able to carve out a life for himself despite terrible difficulties. And that, it brings me back to that theme again that I've been thinking about for some time now, that it really, life really is here to give us the opportunity to be extraordinary. That we don't all start in the same place, but we can all find mechanisms and ways to achieve despite what we're experiencing or what our genetic legacy is. And while I certainly wouldn't recommend some of the things that he's doing, for instance, to get ready for a talk, that's his way, and that's what has worked for him. And as a fellow human being, I want to respect that at least gives him the capability to move forward. So it's very interesting. I read another article this week about a CNN news anchor who has just battled terrible psoriasis all her life and should have ended up basically just hiding in a house somewhere and never going out. And yet, the one thing she had going for is that her face didn't have any problems at all in terms of the psoriasis and the scales and all that sort of thing. And she actually forced herself forward and ended up being an anchor on CNN on television. But then also beyond that, when it was suggested to her that there was another possibility, someone that could help, when she had been disappointed over and 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 over again, she still was willing to try and eventually ended up at a clinic where, she had to get undressed so they could see, and they said, "We've never seen anyone this bad," and they put her on this really strict diet, and they helped her with meditation and helped her with some visualization things, and over the process of many, many months, she was able, actually through a process of visualization and a process of diet, was actually able to send her psoriasis into submission. Now, they said at the end of the article that she still deals with it. Hopefully it's not nearly as bad as it used to be for her. But that process of dealing with it required, required a great deal of discipline on her part to stick with a very rigid and restrictive diet. And I look at those things and just think, wow, good for her. Good job. That someone who is born into circumstances that if I had been born into, who knows if I would have been able to overcome those circumstances, yet here this person has overcome those circumstances. And I think that's very inspiring and should inspire all of us that whatever our situations that we're in and however difficult they are, I'm backing into my garage, there is a way for us to be extraordinary right in the middle of those things. And I believe that as we are extraordinary right in the middle of those things, that we can then begin to grow out of some of those situations and find a way to do well despite the things that we face. And I thought it was interesting at the end of this article, he started talking about an essay, and I need to go find it somewhere, and called The Wound and the Bow. And he said, a literary critic, Edmund Wilson, writes of the Sophoclean hero Philoctetes, whose suppurating, never-healing snake bite wound on his foot is linked to a gift of unerring accuracy with his bow and arrow. His malodorous disease is inseparable from his superhuman art for marksmanship. And he said, I've always been drawn to this parable. It lies as writer Jeanette Winterson has put, the nearness of the wound to the gift, the insight that in weakness and shamefulness is also the potential for transcendence, heroism, and redemption. He said, my anxiety remains an unhealed wound that at times holds me back and fills me with shame, but it may also be at the same time a source of strength and a bestower of certain blessings. And I think that is just tremendous, that someone could actually face what he's facing and yet at the same time recognize that that can be a source of strength for him. And in the middle of that, his coping with this anxiety and his efforts to live through that is heroic and it's extraordinary. And that's what I would like to do, that whatever I'm facing, you know, for me, when the writing career blew up, that was a big deal. That was hard. And I had to walk away from writing. It was hard. But now in the years that have followed and what I learned through that process, and now that I'm back writing again, you know, life is good. Life is good. And I feel like in my life, my particular life, that this effort of crafting my art and writing while I am at the same time working, while I am at the same time loving my wife, loving my children, taking care of my parents, while I am at the same time sharing my life with my friends, I think all of those things, hopefully, at the end of the day, will constitute in some way an extraordinary measure of life. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.